From art galleries to operating rooms, AI is revolutionizing the way that we perceive the world and pushing the boundaries of what is possible. I'm Christy I, and you're watching The Cost of Everything, where today we'll dive deep into the heart of AI, uncovering its impact and the transformative potential that it holds for our future. While ChatGPT has been used by everyone around the world, from writing a child's book report to creating a company PowerPoint presentation, no one has really bothered to ask, how much does it even cost to run such an impressive platform? Well, a new report estimates that the cost to run ChatGPT per day, including how much each query approximately costs. The chatbot that has set off an AI revolution in November 2022, but it has proven extremely expensive to maintain. The research firm says that it costs approximately $700,000 per day, or 36 cents per query, to keep the chatbot up and running. It is so expensive that Microsoft is developing its own proprietary AI chips to assist in the maintenance of OpenAI's operation of ChatGPT. Microsoft Azure Cloud is hosting ChatGPT so that OpenAI does not have to invest in a physical server room. But even so, it is much more expensive than a regular query to a search engine, with one chat costing about 7 times more than a Google request. ChatGPT has struggled with high traffic and capacity issues, slowing down and crashing its servers. The company attempted to fix this by introducing a paid ChatGPT Plus tier at $20 a month. OpenAI currently uses NVIDIA's GPUs to maintain its ChatGPT processes, and industry experts expect that the company will likely require an additional 330,000 GPUs from NVIDIA to maintain its commercial performance for 2023. Microsoft already has AI chips in the works, codenamed Athena. It is currently being tested internally with the brand's own teams and is expected to be introduced next year. In recent years, the AI race has been heating up, with the U.S. and China at the forefront of AI-driven research. Corporations like Google, Facebook, Microsoft, Tencent, and Alibaba are all actively pushing capabilities to new heights. China's Baidu has recently rolled out its own ChatGPT rival, ErnieBot, to the public, making it the first domestic AI app to be fully available in China. Alibaba also rolled out Tongyi Qianwen, its large language model system that is trained on huge amounts of data in order to recognize and generate content. Other countries such as Canada, Japan, and South Korea are also quietly forging their own AI initiatives. India ranked 5th in terms of investments received by startups offering AI-based products and services last year. India received $3.24 billion in total investments, following the US, China, the UK, and Israel. India is planning to launch its own ChatGPT rival soon, and this development could propel India to the forefront of the global AI industry and solidify its position as a major leader. Many are excited for the potential to create meaningful and lasting change across various sectors, ultimately benefiting its people and empowering millions. While people are divided on how artificial intelligence is going to shape the job market, there are studies that have found AI drives productivity. Indian organizations are leading the way towards adopting AI and automation, with 75% of desk employees using AI at work. And this makes India the leader in the world for AI use. And today, we're joined by Tom Towley, author of Artificial Intelligence Basics. Now, Tom, AI has witnessed remarkable advancements in recent years. How do you believe these technological strides are shaping our future, and what benefits can AI bring to various industries?
Yeah, no, I mean, AI has been around for decades, but it really has been in the last 10 years that we've seen a lot of the advances, and primarily because of access to a lot of data, you know, with our phones in particular. So we have a lot of data to work with, and, you know, that data is critical because that's what the models, these sophisticated models like deep learning, use to create their magic. and create, whether it be predictions or like we've seen with ChatGPT, to create content. In terms of the benefits to society or to business, it probably in particular, is that it tends to save us time. So, you know, there's a, just a, you know, imagine just in the workday, all the tedious activities you engage in. You know, if that could be automated, it means that you have much more time to devote to those things that are important. So I look at AI as being a helper. It's like a virtual assistant. It can help us, you know, do the things that we humans can do, but why waste our time on things that are really not that important and that AI can do? But with some of the latest things that we see, like with ChatGPT, you know, it's doing things that we didn't even thought were possible before, like create content, read documents and summarize them for us, and figure things out for us. So, you know, it is, and the advances are just happening every day. So, you know, the next few years could be pretty exciting.
And the pursuit of AI research requires substantial investments. Could you share insights into the level of funding and resources being channeled into AI development and how this investment is driving technological breakthroughs?
Yeah, so the investment comes from different sources for AI. One is venture capital. You know, these are funds that focus on earlier stage companies. You know, like the like OpenAI was at one point was an early stage company, or NVIDIA was an early stage company, and they sought out, you know, venture capital. And the other is another important source of capital is the big megatech corporations like Microsoft. You know, Microsoft wound up being the biggest funder for OpenAI. And we're seeing the big companies get more active, like Google, Oracle, and so forth, get more active in their investments in smaller companies, but also internally for their own development. And, you know, why do we need all this money? For example, OpenAI has raised over $10 billion from Microsoft. Now, you know, why do you need $10 billion? First of all, data scientists are not cheap. It's hard to find PhDs that understand how to create and use and maintain these models. So that's part of it. So, I mean, you could spend seven figures easily on data scientists. And there's competition for it. There's a lot of competition for it. But the other part is just the infrastructure. For ChatGPT in particular, Microsoft had to build a supercomputer to make that happen. Because these models are just massive, hundreds of billions of parameters, huge amounts of memory. It has to be done very quickly, complicated models. And to do that at scale. So if you have 100 million users using AI, you need all the bandwidth. And so the big question, you know, the big cost right now is just the infrastructure cost of, the data centers, the energy, the semiconductors. So for a company like NVIDIA, it's good news because you need these semiconductors to, you know, to create these computers. And so a lot of the costs are, you know, part of it is the data scientists, but that's just a fraction of the costs. And the most of the costs right now are just the infrastructure of making this happen. But a lot of companies like Google are trying to make their models leaner and more streamlined to reduce these costs. So that's a big movement in AI to try to make these models not as expensive as they are today.
AI's applications extend to space exploration and environmental monitoring. So how are AI algorithms being employed to analyze vast data sets from satellites and aid in climate research and disaster response?
This is more the traditional sweet spot for AI, would be more like machine learning or, you know, more in some of more of the advanced deep learning. And this type of capability has been around for decades. So it used to be called analytics or, you know, maybe business intelligence, but really, or big data. So you take a huge amount of data and you find patterns in that data. You know, and what was difficult 20 years ago is you just didn't have the data, you know, but we have thousands of satellites in space collecting huge amounts of data. We have so many sensors. Your car collects huge amounts of data and sends that, you know, into the cloud. Your refrigerator creates data. Your TV creates data. Your phone creates. I mean, just pretty much everything has a computer in it and it's creating data. It's spinning off data. So we have a lot of data to work with. And part of this is to try to find those patterns. And these models can find patterns in these data sets that humans really can't do because there's just so much data. And sometimes we don't see certain patterns that the machines can see or correlate. We've seen a lot of progress with when you mentioned like climate change, our weather forecasts are just really sophisticated AI models, and they do get better and better over time. I'm from LA, so the weather forecasting isn't as great here. but usually in other parts of the world, the weather forecasting is better. And it has a lot to do with the availability of the data and then the sophistication of the underlying models. But I think there's this misconception that it's all about the models. And that's not the case. A lot of it has to do with the data. You can have really nice models, but if you don't have the right data sources, it really doesn't matter much. And besides, a lot of these models are off the shelf and open source and available from academic research. So a lot of what makes AI successful is how to use the data, not so much the models.
Autonomous weaponry and AI-driven cyber attacks are also emerging threats. How do we regulate and control the development of AI technologies with the potential for causing harm or engaging in malicious activities?
As of now, at least for the United States, it's different in other countries. The United States does not have any federal regulation of AI. There's no state regulation either. Now, on the state level, you might have privacy regulations about how you can use private information. But to go and use AI as a way to create a weapon or to create malware, to hack into a system, there's no law against that. Now, there is a law. There are clearly laws of using weapons of mass destruction, and hacking a system, but the creation of that using AI is not prohibited per se. The only regulation that we have at this point is self-regulation. So if I go to ChatGPT, there are guardrails in there. If I and I've tried this, I'll say try to create some malware, and I'll try to trick it, and usually it figures out my tricks and it won't do it. So and these AI companies usually have policies and usage policies saying you can't use this to create weapons or malware or to harass people or to engage in certain activities. And they do try to stamp that out and prevent that. But there are ways that people can spend, if someone wants to do something evil and they have the time, they just have to be right once, and it's known as a jailbreak or prompt injection to go into these systems and trick them into engaging in certain nefarious activities.
Thank you so much, Tom, but please stick around. Author Tom Talley will stay with us right here after the break. And when we come back, tech giants are still battling out who will dominate the AI world. We'll have more after the break. The rivalry between Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk continues to heat up over their pushes into the artificial intelligence world. Zuckerberg's Meta is set to release an open-source version of its AI language model, allowing startups and developers to build tools and software of their own using this tech. And this approach runs counter to the proprietary systems developed by Musk's OpenAI. Musk has often expressed concerns about the potential dangers of AI and has called for more regulation and oversight over AI development. He also warned that AI could potentially become a threat to humanity if not controlled properly, while calling the Facebook CEO's knowledge of the field as limited. Zuckerberg, on the other hand, has a more optimistic view of artificial intelligence. He believes that AI has the potential to bring significant benefits to society, such as improving healthcare, education, and transportation. He also said that AI can be used to solve many of the world's most pressing problems. But Musk isn't the only one, as Geoffrey Hinton, often referred to as the godfather of AI, quit his role at Google suddenly so he could speak freely about the dangers of the technology he helped create. In an interview, Hinton expressed that AI chatbots right now are not more intelligent than us, but soon they may be, and that bad actors may use AI in ways that could have detrimental impacts on society, such as manipulating elections or instigating violence. others in the field, such as Dennis Hazavis of DeepMind and Sam Altman of OpenAI, share the same sentiment and are warning against the risk of extinction from AI and calling for a pause in AI development. However, others doubt these predictions as they point to the inability of AI systems to handle even the most mundane tasks like driving a car, despite years of effort and billions of dollars invested. If AI can't even handle this one challenge, what chance does the technology have of matching every other human accomplishment in the coming years? So for this and more, let's bring in again Tom Talley, author of Artificial Intelligence Basics. Now, Tom, AI's rapid growth has raised concerns about its ethical implications. How can we ensure that AI technologies are developed and used responsibly, and what safeguards are necessary to prevent unintended consequences?
I think that the key word is unintended. And the other key word is, what is ethics? Depending on what country you're from, ethics could be different. Everyone has, you know, different cultures and societies have different views on what ethics is. And there's some things that are fairly generally agreed upon, but other things maybe not so much. So that's a problem with ethics. It's just, you know, whose values do we promote? The other is about unintended consequences. And I do think generally the data scientists who create these systems are good people. You know, I don't think they go out there and they're like mad scientists and try to destroy the world and mankind and, you know, wreak havoc. Now, there are those who are the hackers that try to do that. But I think those that work at companies and have a regular job and are data scientists mostly are on the up and up. But it's unintended consequences. So, you know, because maybe I'm white and I'm male and I went to Stanford and all my friends are white and male and they all went to Stanford, I might have a worldview, and I will have a worldview, and I may not see certain things in my analysis or may overlook certain things that someone who is not part of that category may look at that and say, wait a minute, that you're doing something, you're not doing it intentionally, but just because of the way you're brought up and the way you look at things, you're creating certain systems that have these types of outputs. And also, now they'll say, well, maybe don't use gender for the data, for example, in the analysis. So if we have a credit system to extend credit to an individual, we won't use gender, for example. But there's other data that can reflect gender that can be very nuanced. You know, maybe the type of profession they have, or what school they went to, or what degrees they have, whatever. And that might reflect gender, and that may skew it in a certain direction that may, you know, discriminate or have bias in the outcomes. So these are really difficult questions. And I do think part of helping to deal with this is having more diversity in these companies who are creating these models. And I think that will go a long way in helping this out. But right now, I mean, if you look at a lot of these companies, it tends to be very monolithic in terms of those who are creating these models.
One of the major concerns with AI is bias and discrimination in algorithmic decision-making. How can we address the issue of bias, especially in sensitive areas like criminal justice and hiring processes?
Well, some companies just don't do it. PepsiCo does not use AI to hire employees. Now they may use technology to help streamline certain processes, but they're not going to use it to screen employees. And I think other companies are doing that. And we're also seeing that even companies that create, say, for facial recognition has been used in the justice system. And, you know, there are companies like Microsoft and IBM that are saying, we don't want this technology used for that purpose. So again, it's more like self-regulation saying, we think that and I think part of it is the accuracy. That these systems are not 100% correct. So if they're not 100% correct and the stakes are extremely high, you know, whether someone has their liberty or not, or put in jail, then, the accuracy has to be there. And if it's not, and if you can't prove it, it should not happen. The problem is we don't have regulation on that in the United States. So there are jurisdictions that will use this technology. And I think there was a case recently where a woman was misidentified as being a suspect, and she was put in jail for that. It wasn't her. So it's very, and this is the other thing, besides the horrible situation that the person was put into, when these incidents start happening, it lowers the trust in AI. So it's incumbent upon the industry to create these standards, because if people see this as being a force of bad and harm and evil, they don't want it. They won't want any part of what AI has to offer. So I think the industry is trying to be responsible here, but there's probably a lot more that needs to be done.
Now, the rise of AI-powered deepfake technology has the potential to disrupt trust and authenticity. What strategies can we adopt to combat the spread of misinformation and manipulated media?
Wow, that's a tough one. It's kind of like cybersecurity, where just when you feel like you've prevented something from happening, a hacker comes up with something new. I think that's the case with deepfakes. And deepfakes are achieving levels that are really difficult to differentiate between real and not real. Because of this generative AI technology, it's not even just audio, but it's video. The videos are getting more sophisticated. It may come to the point where you will talk to somebody and think you're talking to a real person, but you're not. And it could be on a Zoom call, and you think that's, and maybe it could result in a fraud where they want to get some money or make a, money transfer or something like that. How do you combat this? What we've done so far is is taken more of a cybersecurity approach to it. We have systems out there that can, a lot of times find irregularities in these. A lot of times it'll be like the angle of the face versus someone's eyes, the lips are almost there, but not quite when it comes to the synchronization with the voice. But at some point, you're not going to be able to tell. And when that happens, I'm not sure what happened. I think it could be that we just have double checks in our system. We just don't always take things on face value, and it may be we just certain times we just even though we think we're talking to a human, there's always that possibility we're not. So if there's something important because of that, make sure you double check. So if someone says, on a Zoom call, I want to make this wire transfer, don't do it just based on that call. Maybe just, make a call somewhere else to whatever department, the payables department, and just to say, just want to make sure I'm going to do this and just everything's okay. So, it'll probably add friction, unfortunately, to activities. I don't think we're there yet, but have been examples of where that's happened, where there's been fraud committed, where people thought they were talking to somebody that was actually an AI generated.
Thank you so much, Tom, for all your time today. Now, the rise of technology giants such as Google and Microsoft has meant that these companies have a near total monopoly on how people access information through search and chat. ChatGPT has created a one-stop place where you can ask anything and get a simple, satisfactory answer back. So instead of a big web with millions of sites, a few companies will rule all of the answers. This monopolization of the internet market in the past couple of years was not even close to what could happen next, as AI queries quickly become the new norm. I'm Christy Yai. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you right back here next time on The Cost of Everything.